Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
One of the things we've been loosely exploring this hour is how right and wrong and scientific truth exist in a philosophical framework. There's a fascinating new book on one of the giants of exact natural science, Isaac Newton. And it shows that as a man of his times, he was seeking ways that to us might seem silly to reconcile science with biblical prophecy. The laws of gravity and motion for Newton were part of an understanding of the universe, but facts that were as valid as the existence of God, a fact for Newton. The seemingly outlandish predictions of scripture like the end of the world, predictions in the Bible's Book of Revelation, all facts, again, for Newton. And for Newton, rational scientific thinking was a way of working out puzzles in the Bible, not for arguing against it. Newton, the religious thinker, is the focus of a new biography that tries to show that Newton, the founder of modern physics, was also a man of his turbulent times, a bridge between scripture and God. Today, you might know that Newton's philosophical chair is occupied by a fellow who speaks with a machine voice from a wheelchair who believes that black holes are apocalypses. That's right, Stephen Hawking says that God is irrelevant, but we need to be prepared to leave our planet because of climate change and worry about hostile aliens. Newton, the religious thinker, in a very different time, had a very similar mix of provocative views. Robert Iliff is professor of history and science at the University of Oxford, and he's author of Priest of Nature, The Religious Worlds of Isaac Newton. And it was a very religious world, Iliff says.
Well, he was brought up in a religious environment during the English Civil Wars. And he suffered. His father died before he was born. He was a lonely boy. His mother left him to some extent when he was 2 years old. But he's brought up in a religious framework. So he sees himself as specially chosen by God. He has this immense intellect, and he knows he has. And he has a duty to understand the natural world that God has created, and he throws himself into that. It's important to realize that he did nearly all his innovative scholarly research into the Bible and religion in the first two or three decades of his career. And after that, the last two or three decades of his life, the stuff is, frankly, much more tedious.
And yet the tools that were available for him at the time to understand these elements of the natural world were limited. His motions of the planets research is something that he is able to calculate from observational data that is available. And yet, as you say, this tedious last couple of decades of his life's work is mostly in the realm of alchemy. It's as though Newton has this sense that there is a world beyond what we know in mathematics, physics, and then chemistry.
Yeah, he actually did nearly all his alchemical research earlier in his career. And so this is searching for things that ordinary chemistry wouldn't give you. So, you know, the chemical basis of life, what he called active principles, things that what he calls vulgar chemistry wouldn't give him. And then I think when he moved to London in 1696, he became warden of the Royal Mint for the last 3 decades of his life. He largely gave up alchemy, but the questions that he was working on still remained. You know, what's the basis of life? Is it electricity? What are the major forces that underpin natural phenomena? I think the difficulty for those of us who work on Newton's religion and alchemy is there doesn't seem to be much connection between them. And I think we've kind of given up trying to force connections and concentrated on things like his work on the apocalypse, on church history, which is what he devoted 70 years of his life to.
Why wasn't the religious sort of elements of Newton's life in conflict with the scientific understanding of the laws of motion, for instance?
I think that Newton himself sees his researches into religion as very much of a piece with his work on science. You know, he believes that there are two books, the Book of Nature and the Book of Scripture, both created by God. And the more one understands about the order of nature, the more one in that period at least believes that it has to have been created by God. The order could not have arisen by chance. And then there's another issue, I think, which is that the vast majority of his writings, because they are so radical and formally heretical, they weren't known until long after he died.
What has become available that really enabled the research into this book, which has been years in the making?
Well, his papers really only became available in the early 1970s. After a long rerouting, they arrived in Jerusalem at the end of the 1960s. And it was only really in the last 15 years that many of us began to put his writings online, and they're now freely available online via the Newton Project. There's about 5 million words of his writings on the apocalypse, early church history, and so on. And I think it's only once all of those things were online that one could write the kind of book that I've done.
On the question of the apocalypse, which is something he devotes an enormous amount of energy to, I would think that as a science historian and someone who's got access to all these papers, that it might be a little nerve-wracking to investigate the apocalypse because, Newton has a habit of being right about things, Mm. And you could sort of stumble around, oh my gosh, it's next Thursday.
Yeah. Well, I hope he's not right about the apocalypse because that means the world's going to end in about 40 years. But it did take me a while to come to terms with the technical difficulties of his account of the apocalypse because it's tricky, it's difficult. He tries to go into it in more detail than anyone else before him because that's what he does. He has that kind of self-confidence and arrogance. But it is something that coloured his life. I mean, he is a Christian of a sort, and he believed that Christian writings, Judeo-Christian writings perhaps, were there for intelligent people to uncover the meaning of, if you like.
Intelligent people who might wanted to have gathered at a dinner with Isaac Newton would probably not have had a good time based on previous biographies and confirmed, it seems, by some of your work.
Well, I think even his friends called him suspicious, and that means paranoid, and clearly he was. But it's funny, his enemies tended to depict him in terrible terms as a sort of sociopath, and I think there's an element of that to him. But his allies and disciples and relatives all painted him in the most glowing terms. And, one or two of them actually said that he laughed once or twice during his life. So,
Oh my God.
That's
priceless. That is priceless.
I think one of the things about him is he is a Puritan in terms of his moral demeanor. And I think if people spoke slightingly about religion in any way, then he conceived a great dislike of them. So as long as you spoke respectfully about religion, I think he'd be an interesting dinner companion.
Robert Iliff is a professor of history of science at the University of Oxford and author of Priest of Nature, The Religious Worlds of Isaac Newton. Thanks so much.
Thank you.